Singular Wireless.
Okay.
Barno?
Good morning, Your Honor. It's Ben Barno on behalf of Appellant. As I am confident the Court is aware, this is an appeal from a dismissal and other rulings by the District Court. Mr. Fedor does not challenge rates or market entry. I think in a review of all of the cases germane to this area, that is the test.
Mr. Barno, are you complaining that the charges were not properly billed because they were attributed to the wrong month, or are you also asserting the charges were not timely billed?
I think they pulled together, Your Honor. The fact is that they were not billed in accordance with the plans in place for particular times. We would have no problem, nor does Fedor have a problem, with their being billed in a later period as long as they're applied to the contract in effect at the time the call was made.
Well, for instance, if a charge that was incurred in January were to appear on an April statement but was billed based on January rates and hours, would that be a problem?
The mere placement of the charge would not be a problem. Quite frankly, Your Honor, and respectfully, I think the Court has put its finger on the problem. What the defendant has tried to do is to say, well, golly gee whiz, Mr. Fedor says we all need all these other towers here to do all of this. Wrong. They have whatever towers they have. We don't care. Fedor doesn't complain about the service. But where the Court's inquiry leads me is where I was frankly going, and I appreciate your helping me getting there, is that that doesn't foreclose singular the defendant from recognizing the amount that should be charged in accordance with whatever rates they have. We don't complain about the rates at that time. The amount of towers doesn't say that you can't have a computer program that says, well, look, this was billed in January. Mr. Fedor had a free 2,500 minutes then, and he had free roaming then. They make the business choice to loop it into another period and deny whatever would have been available under the program in place when the call was actually made. It has nothing to do with towers. This Court has recognized the issues most recently, I think, in Bastion. And as the Court correctly, in my opinion, said there, that my words, not the Court, that complaint dripped with issues challenging rates and infrastructure. In that situation, the defendant actually had in place means for credits, etc. In fact, the plaintiff had availed himself of those. They had gone to the FCC, and the FCC told him that AT&T was in compliance. Of course, that was in a period of time where you had these companies developing the marketplace. In any event, as the Court pointed out in Bastion, most of the allegations centered on having enough towers, having enough capacity, etc. Fedor, nowhere in the complaint can you find that. Quite frankly, as we pointed out in our reply, it is our position that the defendant has had to recast our complaint with its own wording, which often is not there. The other thing that the defendant does, probably because the only argument it can find, is the suggestion that it needs more towers to record calls, which is not true.
So in other words, bottom line, you're not seeking a change in rates, you're not seeking a change in the infrastructure, you're seeking a change in the billing system so that charges are applied to the correct month, and in resolving that issue, we wouldn't have to consider whether rates are reasonable or just. Is that right?
It's correct with a variation on that theme, and that is we're not asking any change, because they send out the bills, and all they have to do is have their computer program apply the right charge. We don't care anything. Mr. Fito has never complained about the services. In fact, quite frankly, a review of the bills will show that he's a heavy user, and you see no complaints in there. We complain about not getting credits when they could. In our allegations, we not only allege the omission of the practice where you bill in a different time period, which I think gets us under the long-distance litigation, I guess it's within it, but we also allege that they failed to give credits and harassed consumers to pay charges not due, and it's consumer fraud and related. So that is correct. In substance, we seek no change. We don't care about the amount of towers. They have what they have. It's not impairing their business practices. And they've shown the ability to track the calls and bill them. They just want to get paid double. People have already paid for the calls in accordance with an extant package, such as Mr. Fito at 1 month had 714 minutes used against 900. He had the remaining balance. And yet in the next month, where they rolled them over, they charged them for it. That doesn't take Einsteinian mathematics for them to figure out. And quite frankly, their only affidavit down below talks about these towers, etc. They never say that they don't have the computer capacity, mathematical capacity, or accounting staff to do that, and quite frankly, even if they didn't, they should get it. And it wouldn't affect rates in such a direct manner. Of course, it's stated that just because you have related expense, and that somehow you might go in for a rate increase or whatever, although now the federal rate doctrine doesn't apply, doesn't affect rates directly. I think the cases make it very clear, particularly the cases from this honorable court, that the court wants to balance and protect the preemption elements against what could be an overreaching interpretation of the savings clause. I think Judge Posner and his court dealt with that. And respectfully, I would suggest that if this court or any other court would buy into the defendant's argument, the test would flip the other way. There would be no savings clause. I mean, on his face, you can, on his complaint, but even looking behind the allegations, one can find nothing that talks of rates or entry. And with that, I would save my time for rebuttal.
Thank you. Mr. Griffin?
May it please the court. Hugh Griffin on behalf of the Appalachian Defendant Appalachian Singular Wireless. We obviously have a black and white disagreement here with my opponent. The district court, we believe, correctly held that this case is clearly controlled by Bastion. In fact, we would submit that this is more of a market rent entry rates case than even Bastion was. What the billing delay that he's complaining about is, as the unrefuted affidavit established that was filed in this case, is an inherent limitation on the nationwide interstate roaming system by which Singular has been permitted by the FCC to enter the market and provide its customers with nationwide service, even though it does not have its own nationwide system of cellular towers.
Well, Mr. Griffin, even if Singular can't calculate the charges in a more timely manner because of infrastructure issues, why can't its billing procedures reflect when the calls were made? For instance, why can't the March bill for a January call apply the rates and hours that were available for January to that call? And isn't that issue just completely separate from the reasonableness of the rates themselves or the infrastructure issues?
Well, but the affidavit established that the infrastructure is the issue, because we don't have, since we don't own all the towers, the roaming charges don't come to us when the calls are made.
So what?
So there's nothing to do.
That's how you know what they were.
No, we don't. That's just it. That's what the affidavit established.
But you never know what they were?
We know what they are when the roaming carrier that did the roaming service sends us a bill typically within 30 days after the call was made.
But see, it seems to me that the complaint accepts the rate in the contract at face value and simply alleges that the billing practice is problematic because charges incurred in one month are charged under the rates and hours for a different month. You know what the charges are for the various months.
That's not at all the case. I mean, the affidavit that we filed here, he's complaining about his roaming charges. When he roams, he doesn't roam on our system. He roams on another carrier system with whom we have an inter-carrier roaming agreement.
Right.
And
so
within 30, that's why we can't bill it at the same time like we bill a local call. We don't know what
it is. If you bill it at the same time. He's happy to have you bill it 2 months later.
No, that's his whole complaint. His whole complaint
is you're billing 2 months later at the rate. In other words, it wouldn't have cost him anything, I gather.
I mean, that's the funny part about this. I mean, he's claiming this in a certain month it hurt him because I guess, you know, if it came in the month he made the call, he would have had some time left under his call package. But in the next month, it might work just the opposite. He might have made a whole bunch of calls over his limit, but the bills don't come in until 30 days later when he's got a much lighter
Let me go through this with you and see if I understand. He had a block of time in February, let's say, and at the time he made the call, if he would have received the bill for that month, would have been within that block of time, and there would have been no extra charge, no additional charge.
In that given month, that's his claim.
He
could work the other way.
Well, I understand that, but he made the call in that month, and you know he made the call in that month, and you know that the time he made the call, he was within his minutes. But you don't get your information until a month later. Right, so you couldn't build him that month, but you know that he was within the time frame at the time you billed him, or could know that. So you wouldn't have billed him, or wouldn't have charged him anything, because he would have been, the time he made the call, he was within the block of time allotted. Isn't that true?
But that bill's already gone out. We don't know the charge for the call until we get it from the interconnecting carrier. So,
I mean, I understand that, but by accounting methods, you could still say this is you were within your block of allotted time. There's no charge. Instead of billing him in an expired block of time and the date you billed him, even though he made the call in the previous month.
See, what it means is this: it seems to me that if a call is made in January and Singular doesn't become aware of the charge until March, Singular needs to bill that call based on the hours and the rate for January, not those for March. In other words, Mr. Fader isn't seeking a change in the rate or the infrastructure, but rather a change in the billing system so that the charges are properly applied to the correct month. And to resolve that issue, we don't have to consider whether the rates were reasonable or just.
I guess, if I'm following you, you're saying we'd have to go back and rebill when we got the charge.
Well, the first bill you would send out would be the March, would reflect the January charges.
But we don't get that January charge until...
Well, you don't have to. If I run up and buy a pair of pants, and the tailor doesn't send the bill to the people who bill me until March, he does it at the January figure, not at the March figure. That's some difference. But if the price in January, it's on sale at a white sale, is different than it is in March, which is off the white sale. They don't bill me for the March thing when they get the bill. They bill me for what it cost when I bought them.
Well, I know, but the thing is, the minutes are coming in continually. So I guess at the worst, you're saying that that the FCC has allowed us to...
Well, don't you have a block? Don't they have 3 blocks by the month?
They have them by the month.
It's not continuously. So each month they have a separate block.
Right.
There's your problem. Although the billing, the calling may be going on continuously, in each given month there is a free block, not a free block, but a prepaid block, right?
Well, it's complicated because he jumped between two different programs. One month he had a nationwide system, which means that all his calls were within that block of 900 minutes. Uh-huh. Then he switched back to a local system, which meant that only his local calls were within the block. So that's part of the confusion on this bill.
I see.
Well, okay, so he changed contracts. I guess. But make it simpler for us, at least for all three of us. If you stayed on a nationwide where he had 900 minutes were what he was provided, and that's the January bill, and he was only called 750, and in March under the same 900 minutes, he used 925. If you bill him for the calls that he made in January, in March, you give him an overage. You charge him for those, where if you'd have been able to bill him in January, you wouldn't have.
Right, but it could work the other way next month.
Well, I understand.
That's just the way the billing goes.
So
well, but that's
you get a credit, or you get a...
I mean, that's the idea. It's just a matter of the billing.
But
if it goes both ways, then...
But I mean, going back to Best, you know, what he's really saying is that he says in his complaint three or four times, I've been charged too much for these services. I still think, no matter how you draw this, he's arguing about the rate he was charged, and he's still...
No, he's saying he was charged twice.
Well, he was only billed once. I mean, the way he's looking at it, I mean, I understand what he's saying when he says that, but he's only being billed once. So, I mean, if the argument is that the FCC has allowed us to pursue this business in this fashion, which they have, and which we still say is an inherent aspect of the roaming system.
It's not to require you to change how you deal with your contracting roaming people. It's just how, once you get those bills, how you deal with your customers.
Well, but our affidavit, it certainly the district court found, that was really part of our...
I don't know if we're all necessarily disagreeing, but partly we're trying to understand, are you incapable of making an accounting change or a computer change to accommodate that?
I mean, there was certainly no evidence put on by the plaintiff. I mean, we filed our affidavit saying this is an inherent aspect of the roaming system. They didn't respond with an accountant that said, hey, that's baloney, you can do this, you can do that. I mean, the issue you're raising, I mean, it seems to me he's raising it now, but he didn't put anything on to back it up down in the district court. I mean, the district court expressly found that his complaints about customer billing are really a complaint about the manner in which Singular enters and operates in new markets. And that was the purpose of the affidavit, to establish that. I mean, I don't know what the remedy is. The one remedy is obviously to go out and build more towers. If there's an accounting remedy, I mean, it's never been put on the record. Nobody's ever come forward to say what that is. I mean, there's certainly no fraud here. I mean, you know, I meant to get to that. I mean, he just has these vague allegations, really less general, I mean, less specific, more general than even in Bastion. You know, this is not a false advertising case. He never said that we told him that all the minutes that you use in one billing period will be billed in that specific period. You know, there's no.
Does the FCC, for example, say you bill when you get your charge from your roaming contractor?
Right. That's the norm in the industry. The affidavit establishes that the intercarrier agreements are made, and it's a norm in the industry. Under an independent body that was identified in the affidavit as setting the standards, if you will, and the standard they set forth is normally 30 days after the servicing carrier completes the call. They have 30 days to revert back to you the bill, and that's when it goes on the bill, and that's part of the roaming system, which is certainly an inherent part of our entry into this market and how we service our customers.
I'll give you a couple more minutes, Mr.
Griffin. Yeah. I mean, that's again the inherent way in which we service our customers. So to me, this was a stronger case, even in Bastion, where the complaint was that, you know, nobody told me that the service wasn't going to be very good because you weren't fully up to speed, you know, even in the local market. Again, you know, you held that was still a rates case, that was still a market entry case. Again, we don't see our cases even being anywhere near that. Again, this is not something inherently prejudicial to the customer. Delays in billing are bad for the company. I'm sure if we had a way we could bill like that, we would. I mean, delay in collecting money is not good. He's complaining on a certain month it worked against him, but in next month it might work for him. We don't even see this as being, you know, as significant an omission, if you will, as the Bastian case. And we submit that the district court was correct in holding this case as controlled by Bastian, and we respectfully urge that you affirm the district.
Let me ask you just one more question. Does the fact he changed contracts have any bearing?
Yes, it does. Because in his reply brief, he makes an assertion that he's also complaining about local calls. But that's really not so, because the first thing that he went on that, I think it's Exhibit B of his complaint. If you look at Exhibit B in paragraph 7 of his complaint, even he explains that when he was on that 900 Nation system, all his minutes were included in that package, so he never got an itemized bill for roaming. Then when he went back over on the local, when he went back over on the 2500 digital system, then he was only covered for local calls, and that's when he got all those itemized bills for roaming. So in both cases, it's a roaming issue.
Are you arguing that the allegations in the complaint involve rate setting?
Yes, I think they impact rate setting, yes. Because ultimately, if you look at paragraph 6, 8, and 24, he's saying the same thing. He was charged more than he should have been for the cellular services that he received, which is the same ultimate allegation that was made in the Bastian case. And you also said in Bastian you have to look at the remedy to figure out if this is really impacting market entry or rates. And, of course, again, the only way we know to cure this is to start building more towers all over the country, and that's going to have an impact on rates. So, yes, I think it is a rates case, but then clearly a market entry case. And the district court was correct in so holding.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
You have 3 minutes.
Thank you.
Actually, I'll give you 5 since I extended to Mr. Griffin.
Thank you.
You need it.
First of all, this idea that this affidavit somehow wraps everything in, I think when the court reviews the affidavit, you'll see it stops at the issue of we don't have enough towers, there aren't enough towers to relay the information. Nothing in that affidavit justifies the accounting practice, and counsel wildly overreaches in that regard. No plaintiff is obligated to fill a hole that they have dug for the sense of creating a red herring, and that red herring is still swimming in the shoulder on the defendant's side. With regard to the roaming issues, counsel made a sweeping comment that that you know, he might win in 1 month and lose in the other. Absolutely incorrect. It's just totally wrong, because the roaming charges were always free under the first package. So when you charge for them, he only loses. For some reason, the defendant has the idea that the roaming charges are somehow swept into the local calls. I think they have the idea because they can't deal with the local calls and the fact that when you're shortchanged, when you do 714 minutes in a month and entitled 900, that they can't implicate this power argument. So they claim they're all related. But respectfully, upon examination, I think the court will see, if it has not already seen, that that's just whole cloth. It just doesn't work. With regard to the different contracts, all it does, quite frankly, is make Mr. Fedor a better class representative for the sweep and scope of this consumer fraud. Counsel has also said that this is not a fraud case. Well, we alleged it was, and we alleged it with consumer fraud, and that's one of our remaining counts, that in the contract count. Most importantly, as I'm sure counsel is aware, is that under the Illinois Consumer Fraud Statute, as with most, if not all, other consumer fraud statutes in this country, omission is clearly an element of fraud. So when counsel gives this court, respectfully, his conclusion, he's wrong, he's not the jury, and he's surely not the court, and the law says otherwise. The idea that it's complicated, I don't get it. I know I shouldn't be giving testimony here, but I do note that counsel, I'll try not to, I do know that counsel said, if we had a way to do so, we would. Respectfully, I will only balance that comment with that a while back, I don't know if it's still continuing, but the companies were advertising, it may have been his client, I don't know that, I'm not saying that, but it was a major campaign from a major cellular provider that minutes lost in one period would be carried over to another month. So since he gave his testimony, I will reference the public knowledge with that regard. Respectfully, even if that was an issue, and I suggest it is not. There's been no evidence with regard to that in the lower court. What happened in the lower court is that at a presentation of a motion for reconsideration without, I believe there was no additional briefing, the judge asked counsel for the defendant, one of the counsel, and the court relied upon those comments from counsel. Now, I'm not suggesting anything untoward to counsel. I don't mean it that way. But the fact that the counsel didn't know is underscored, and this is attached to our brief in chief, and I'll just read briefly from it. It's on page 4 of the transcript. It's the last exhibit in our a brief of the appellant. The judge asked, asked Mr. Comiskey, one of the attorneys for the defendant, is it your position or is it the position of Singular that the way in which they assess the roaming charges, the period, the way they do them periodically, is that related to your equipment or to an accounting procedure? What causes that? I think, respectfully, I think the court saw where the issue should have gone, but respectfully, he should not have taken the testimony from counsel, particularly relied upon that which was said, because it's less than probative for a lot of reasons, including the substance, and I'll read that now. Mr. Comiskey, it's related to the equipment and to the interrelationship between local phone services and remote services. I think that's even belied by their own affidavit, depending on how you interpret local phone services. Next paragraph. What happens when you roam, when you're outside of the Chicago area and you make a cellular call, you necessarily use the cellular facilities of a different organization and probably, that's improbably, the landline facilities of the local telephone company, and the call gets routed as it ordinarily would, and it continues. Respectfully, that type of testimony from an attorney would be inappropriate. I think the word probably, even if it was appropriate, would leave open the issue. But more importantly, it doesn't matter. This idea of these powers doesn't matter. They work. We don't complain about them. The idea that they cannot have an accounting procedure is nowhere in the record. And on this record here, we were not obligated to bring that up, and nor is it relevant. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thanks to both counsel. The case will be taken under advisement.